Prime Minister, Mr. Robert Flello. Question one, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the whole House will join me in paying tribute to the British Embassy staff who were killed and injured in Kabul following the horrific bomb attack last week. Our thoughts are with their families and their friends at this time. We will not allow such inhumanity to deter us from building a stable future for the Afghan people. We have nothing but admiration for the staff of the Embassy, British and Afghan, who work together at great personal risk to help achieve this. This morning I have meetings with ministerial colleagues and others, and in addition to my duties in this House, I shall have further such meetings later today.
Mr. Robert Flello.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to associate myself and my constituents with the Prime Minister's remarks about our brave staff, not just in the embassy in Kabul, but of course across the world in very dangerous places. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister promised to balance the books by 2015 and to cut the debt. Despite punishing the poorest with cuts, the deficit has barely been touched, and borrowing is greater in the last 4 years than it has been in the previous 13. Doesn't, Mr. Speaker, this country desperately need a Labour government?
We have got the deficit down by a third because we have taken tough and difficult decision after tough and difficult decision, and they've all got one thing in common. Each and every decision was opposed by the party opposite.
Richard Bacon.
Mr. Speaker, on Monday morning at Norwich Research Park, I thought I heard the sound of a cuckoo, which is remarkable since we haven't even reached Christmas, let alone spring. Does the Prime Minister agree with me that this may be further evidence of the strength of our long-term economic plan?
Well, I was delighted to meet with my honourable friend and other Norwich MPs at the Norwich Research Park to talk about the expansion of infrastructure in our country, and in particular the improvements we're going to make to the A47, which will not just help Norwich and the Norwich Research Park, but actually will help all of East Anglia, right out to Lowestoft, and I know how important that is to make sure that important part of our country also benefits from our long-term economic plan.
Miliband.
Mr. Speaker, I join the Prime Minister in paying tribute to the British Embassy staff killed in the appalling terrorist attack in Kabul last week. It's a reminder of the danger that our embassy staff and military personnel still in Afghanistan face on a daily basis, and all of our thoughts are with the family and friends of those who died. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister said earlier this year, and I quote, "Woe betide the politician that makes big promises and then says, oh, sorry, I didn't really mean it." Can he recall any time he might have done that?
Well, let me tell him the promises we've kept. We promised to get the economy growing. It's the fastest growing in the G7. We promised to get unemployment down. We've created 1.8 million new jobs. We promised to make Britain a great place to start a business. There are 760,000 more businesses in this country. This government is a government that's made its commitments, kept its commitments, and as a result, we've got a plan that's working.
Mr. Speaker, I think, come to think of it, he might have broken a big promise quite recently. Immigration down to the tens of thousands. No ifs, no buts. What did he say in his contract with the British people? If we don't deliver our side of the bargain, vote us out in 5 years' time. When he said it, did he mean it?
Yes, and we've cut immigration from outside the EU by 24%. But with immigration, every single step we've taken was opposed by the Labour Party in the last 4 years. And what did they do for 13 years in government? They put immigration up as a deliberate act of policy. This government made promises to our pensioners, promises kept, promises on our NHS, promises kept. Above all, a promise to turn our economy round from the mess left by those two.
So he did mean it. Throw him out because he broke his promise. Now, Now, what he ought to be saying, but daren't say, is that he made a solemn promise and he broke it. Let's turn to another one of those big solemn promises. This is what he said to the nurses' conference just before the last election, and I quote, "I want to tell you what we're not going to do. There will be no more of those pointless reorganisations that aim for change, but instead bring chaos." Mr. Speaker, when he said it, did he mean it?
What we have done is see more doctors, more nurses, more patients treated. But I have, if we're on promises, Mr. Speaker, I have a little list. I have a list of his promises. Right, here we go. Mr. Speaker, he promised deep... However long it takes. I've got all day, and I can tell you I'm looking forward to what comes next, and I think he will be too. Right, he promised detailed plans for a graduate tax. Where is it? He promised an alternative spending review. That was in 2010. Where's that? He promised he'd tell us the list of business people he had dinner with in 2011. Where's that one? He promised to stand up to the unions on public sector pay. When has he ever done that? He promised he wouldn't let the unions run the Labour Party, and they run it more than ever.
What he ought to be saying, but daren't, is that he made a solemn promise of no top-down reorganisation of the NHS, and he broke that promise. Let's turn to his promise on living standards. The 2010 Conservative Manifesto made this big promise, and I quote, "An economy where standards of living rise steadily." Mr. Speaker, when he said it, did he mean it?
Yes, I meant it, and 26 million people having their taxes cut. 3 million people.
Order. Both the questions and the answers must be heard. The Prime Minister.
26 million people have had their taxes cut. 3 million of the poorest people have been taken out of income tax altogether. The minimum wage has been increased for the first time since his Great Recession. And now people who've been in work for a year are seeing a 4% increase in their pay. They bankrupted our economy. We know that Mrs. Brown's Boys was a comedy. Mr. Brown's Boys was a tragedy.
He's obviously been visiting the David Mellor School of Charm recently. What he ought to be saying, but daren't, is that he made a solemn promise to improve living standards, and he has broken it. Now, what about his biggest promise of all on the deficit? In October 2010, he promised, in 5 years' time, we will have balanced the books. When he said it, did he mean it?
We promised to cut the deficit. It's down by a third, and in a moment or two, we'll see the progress that has been made. And obviously, I can't reveal what's in the Chancellor's autumn statement. That wouldn't be proper. But I make this prediction. Mr. Speaker.
The answers must be heard. The Prime Minister.
I simply make this prediction, Mr. Speaker. In a moment or two, he will be looking as awkward as when he ate that bacon sandwich. Predictions, let us remember his predictions. He said our policy would lead to the disappearance of a million jobs. Wrong. He said it was a fantasy the private sector would create the jobs. Wrong. He said we would choke off jobs and growth. Wrong. The fact is, they told us there would be a lost decade. They told us there would be a double dip recession. They told us there would be a million more unemployed. They have been wrong on every single economic issue.
He's failed every every test he set himself. And the thing about this Prime Minister is he's turned breaking promises into an art form. And as the election approaches, the thing the British people know about this Prime Minister is that when he says it, he doesn't mean it.
What a contrast. This is a Prime Minister and this is a government that has turned our economy round, sorted out our public finances and got the economy growing. And no one in this country will ever forget that they are the people who sold the gold, who broke the economy, who bankrupted the nation, and still they sit there completely hopeless and unelectable.
Speaker, the City of York is truly benefiting from the government's Northern-led economic plan, and the government is rightly investing in transport infrastructure across Yorkshire. With that in mind, would the Prime Minister agree to meet with me and a delegation of local businesses to discuss their campaign to dual the York Northern Ring Road, which is seen, given the high levels of congestion, as a serious barrier to further economic growth for our city?
Well, I think my honourable friend is absolutely right. I know what a problem this road can be. The point is that infrastructure investment does unlock growth. That's why on Monday we announced the biggest roads programme in a generation, including £2.3 billion for major roads in Yorkshire and the North East. I'm very happy to arrange a meeting between him and the Transport Secretary to discuss this, but he'll know we do have substantial plans to upgrade the Hopgrove Junction, where traffic on the Northern Ring Road gets on and off to the A64, and we believe that will make a real difference.
Angus Robertson.
Speaker, does the Prime Minister intend to devolve corporation tax to Northern Ireland and Scotland in tandem, or in contrast to the vow, has he already decided to veto the devolution of corporation tax to Scotland entirely?
We are implementing the Smith Commission, and that's what we believe should be implemented. In terms of Northern Ireland, the Chancellor will set out our position in a moment or two, but let's be absolutely clear about the very big differences there are between Northern Ireland and Scotland. Northern Ireland having a land border with the Republic and having had all the difficulties and troubles, and him shaking his head in that way shows how little Scottish nationalists actually care about the rest of our United Kingdom.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 56 years ago, Simon Wingfield Digby, the then Honourable Member for West Dorset, made the first plea for improvements to the A303 in this House. Thanks to this government's careful management of the economy, the Prime Minister was warmly welcomed once again to Wiltshire this week to announce £1.3 billion investment in the tunnel at Stonehenge. Will the Prime Minister now reassure the people of the South West that we will not have to wait another 56 years for it to be delivered?
I could certainly make that commitment. I was one of a number of people who made their way to Stonehenge this week to go and see how important this will be. It will be a tunnel of at least 1.8 miles. It's part of an overall plan to create that expressway all the way between the M3 and the M5 and down into Cornwall to make sure we really improve this absolutely vital road network. As for Stonehenge itself, I think it will make sure that this extraordinary monument also has the setting and the attention that it deserves too.
Mr. Graham Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A Haslingden constituent, 20-year-old Sophie Lancaster, was brutally murdered in 2007, kicked to death in a park by a group of males for simply being part of a subculture, a goth. She was a victim of hate crime. The implications of this tragedy continue today. Will the Prime Minister meet with the Sophie Lancaster Foundation to see the excellent work they do and do everything he can to ensure that there is a clear message that there are no exceptions to hate crime?
You know, well, I remember the absolutely tragic case of the girl that he talks about and the way that appalling way in which she was treated and beaten. And I'm very happy to look at what meeting I can arrange to make sure that agenda of how we combat hate crime in all its forms is properly addressed in our country.
Mike Crockart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This week, 40 banks and building societies issued a joint declaration to deal with the multi-million pound crimes of vicious and courier fraud, where people are called by criminals posing posing as police officers or bank employees and asked to hand over bank cards and PIN numbers to assist fraud inquiries. I've been working with Age UK, Alzheimer's Society and Cobblocker tech manufacturers to build a scheme to protect the most vulnerable in society from this crime. The DCMS ministers are too busy to discuss it. It seems they are able to block my nuisance calls. Will the Prime Minister help the vulnerable to do the same?
Well, I will certainly make sure that DCMS ministers, if necessary, meet with him and the group that he's talking about. It is important that we deal with all of these issues wherever they come from.
Janara Ali.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The 2010 Conservative Manifesto promised an economy where not just our standard of living, but everyone's quality of life rises steadily and sustainably. Why then, in the last year, have wages grown by the smallest amount since records began?
I must say how delighted I am that after 4.5 years, finally, the Labour Party wants to debate the economy at Prime Minister's questions. I feel this is a golden day for us. It means that we can talk about the 1.8 million jobs that have been created. It means we can talk about the fact that for those who've been in work for a year, they're seeing their pay go up by 4%. It means we can talk about how we've lifted the basic rate threshold to £10,500 and taken 3 million people out of tax. All of these things are helping to make sure that millions more of our countrymen and women have the dignity and security of a job and the ability to provide for their families. That's what's happening in Britain. The economy has been turned around from the disastrous situation left by the Labour Party, and that's something the whole country can be proud of.
Mr. Bernard Jenkins.
May I commend to my right honourable friend the debate which was kicked off in Westminster Hall this morning by my honourable friend from Meon Valley about the catastrophic decline of sea bass stocks across the whole of Northern Europe, and how we heard that successive governments have been trying to persuade the EU for decades to address this problem. Will he undertake to put the entire weight of the government behind the collapse of sea bass stocks in order to address this at the European Union Fisheries Policy this month?
My honourable friend raises an important point about sea bass stocks, but also about fish stocks more broadly. There have been, under this government, some real improvements in the way fisheries policies work in the EU, with a greater level of devolution, and we need to keep pushing that forward to make sure that our fisheries and our stocks can recover. That's the only way to make sure this is a long-term, sustainable industry.
This is Mary Glyndon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Will the Prime Minister please explain why the government has borrowed almost £4 billion more this year compared to last year at the same time, and does he regret his firm promise to balance the books by next May?
This government has had to borrow a lot of money is that we inherited the biggest budget deficit in the world. Yes, it was 11% of our GDP when we came to government. We've already cut it by a third. We'll hear in a moment or two how we're now getting on. But I would like to highlight something the Shadow Chancellor said this week. He said that he would be tough on the deficit and tough on the causes of the deficit. He is one of the causes of the deficit. I think we've just found the first ever example of political masso-sadism.
Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Order. I understand the House gets excited, but I think Mr. Kaczynski will scarcely be able to hear himself, let alone anybody else have the chance to hear him. Let the honourable gentleman be heard. Mr. Kaczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the Prime Minister sincerely for all the help that he's given to all the Shropshire MPs in securing our direct train service to Shrewsbury, which starts later this month. It's a vital boost for our inward tourism and inward business investment into Shropshire. Will he take advantage of us now being connected to London to come and visit Shrewsbury and visit the wonderful new university that we are creating in our beautiful town?
I look forward to the opportunity of visiting Shrewsbury if I can. Let me be clear. Sorry, I meant to say masochism. I'm sorry, Mr. Speaker. It out, but he can't take it. But after this quote, I think he obviously quite likes taking it as well. So there we are. We've learned a lot of interesting things today. It's magnificent what's happening in Shrewsbury, and if you look across the country, there have been improvements to 400 stations, including King's Cross.
Mr. Stephen Timms.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister said his economic policy would eradicate the deficit in this Parliament. All he can claim today is that after 4 years, it came down by a third, and the last few months, it's been going up. Yeah. Would he accept that the big fall in real wages since the election is a large part of the explanation for why his economic policy has fallen so far short on its central objective?
Only after 4 years of never mentioning the deficit and opposing every single spending cut we've had to make, suddenly there seems to have been a sort of Damascus-like conversion, and suddenly they're all interested in the deficit. Well, let me give him a bit of a lesson. Yes, we've had to make very difficult decisions, cutting some government departments, some by as much as 20%, every single decision opposed by the party opposite, and in terms of what's happening with wages, as I've just said, the recent figures out showed that people who've been in work for over a year are seeing pay increases of 4%, and we're helping everyone in work by cutting their taxes. In the end, the only way to sustainably raise living standards is to grow the economy, create jobs, and cut taxes. Three things we're doing, three things Labour would never do.
Mr. Speaker, this morning more people went to work than ever before in the history of our nation. Is the Prime Minister aware that in Dover and Deal, unemployment has fallen by 37% thanks to our welfare reforms, thanks to our long-term economic plan? Why would we ever return to where we were less than five short years ago?
Friend is absolutely right. In Dover, the claimant count is down by 24% since the election. Across the southeast, the number of people employed in the southeast is up by almost a quarter of a million. We've got record levels of employment. With all these, anyone getting a job is then someone else who's got that security and that stability who can provide for their family. And at the same time as this increase in employment, we've also seen the pay gap between men and women, particularly under 40, reduced to the lowest ever level. So we are seeing a strong and solid recovery, but as the Chancellor will explain in a moment, there is no room for complacency. We've got to stick to the long-term economic plan and deliver it.
Mr. Dennis Skinner.
Is the Prime Minister proud of the fact that in this Parliament, this government has added £430 billion to the national debt, which is more than all the Labour chancellors of the Exchequer this century? He can't blame Labour for that figure.
Oh, yes, I can. We inherited the biggest budget deficit in Britain's peacetime history. You had, the Labour Party had, the longest and deepest recession in a century. That is what we were delivered. Since then, we've turned the economy around. We've got 2 million private sector jobs. We've cut the deficit. 760,000 more businesses are operating in our country. And we have the fastest growing economy of any G7 or major European country. That is an economic record that no Labour government could ever match.
Droitwich Spa Boxing Academy, run entirely by volunteers, trains talented boxers and provides a highly valued community resource, turning round the lives of many disruptive and troubled young people. It's a shining example of the big society. Does the Prime Minister understand? Does the Prime Minister understand my deep concern for the blinkered decision of HMRC to insist on a draconian interpretation of the VAT rules on its new building will result in the Academy's closure?
Well, first of all, I know what an important job the Droitwich Spa Boxing Academy does. It is run entirely by volunteers, and I know how hard my honourable friend, right honourable friend, works for his constituents. We will look carefully at this case. As he might know, unfortunately, zero rating of VAT on construction services is very limited and doesn't apply to buildings used as sports clubs. But the HMRC are willing to discuss flexibility on arrangements to pay the VAT bill through their time to pay scheme with the owners. And what I will make sure is that discussions take place very rapidly between my honourable friend and HMRC to see what can be done.
Seema Malhotra.
Mr Speaker, cancer waits for no one, and with fast-growing cancers in particular, time is of the essence. The cancer treatment target in England has been missed for 9 months. Over 15,000 patients waiting more than 2 months to start treatment. Doesn't this prove, yet again, that you cannot trust the Tories with the NHS?
I share the Honourable Lady's concern about how rapid our cancer treatment must be, and that is why I'm proud of the fact that under this government an extra 460,000 people more per year are getting cancer treatment, are getting referrals. There are around 7 key cancer targets and we're meeting all but one of them. And I have to say to the Honourable Lady, that is quite a contrast with Wales, where the Labour Party has been in control of the NHS for the last 4 years, where they haven't met a cancer target since 2008. It's no good shaking your head. It is her party who's in charge of the NHS in Wales, and they are letting down cancer patients day after day.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Following the threat of a legal challenge, NHS England have scrapped their processes for approving drugs for rare conditions. This is affecting a couple of hundred children in the country, including 6-year-old Sam in my constituency who has Morchio. Will the Prime Minister today instruct the Secretary of State for Health to re-establish the highly specialised commissioning service, who can then approve this drug to ensure that these children get the drugs that they need immediately before a new process is put in place?
Well, I'm very happy to discuss that issue with the Secretary of State for Health. As he knows, we have a procedure for licensing drugs. When it comes to cancer drugs, we have the additional benefits of the Cancer Drugs Fund, but I'm very happy to take away the point that he raises and discuss it with the Health Secretary.
Nick Dakin.
Mr Speaker, the Prime Minister promised the British people that his government would eliminate the deficit and significantly reduce immigration. Why has he failed the British people on both these counts?
Mr Speaker, if I could sum up, the Labour Party's approach seems to be this. We created an enormous problem, and we have come here today to complain that you haven't cleared it up fast enough. That is really the extent of the intellectual analysis of Britain's problems. I have to say, it is quite ridiculous when you realise they left us with the biggest budget deficit since the war, which we've started to get on top with, and we'll make more progress.
Mary McLeod.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Given that there are the record number of small businesses today in Chiswick, Brentford, Isleworth and Hounslow, and given that SMEs represent 99% of the business community, and that Saturday is Small Business Saturday, would my right honourable friend join with me in encouraging everyone to shop local on Saturday, as well as making small businesses a priority in our long-term economic plan?
I absolutely agree with my honourable friend. We now see a record number of small businesses in our country, a total increase of 760,000 over this Parliament. Small Business Saturday is an excellent event where we can boost small businesses and draw attention to the work that small businesses do. There will, on Friday, we'll kickstart this event with a small business fair in Downing Street, and it's a good moment to make sure that small businesses are benefiting from all the changes that we've made, such as the cut in the jobs tax for businesses and charities of £2,000, abolishing national insurance contributions for under 21-year-olds when they employ them, doubling the small business rate relief, and of course cutting corporation tax for small business as well. This government has a very strong record for saying to small business, we respect what you do in terms of creating the jobs, the wealth, the prosperity that our country needs.
Steve Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Scamersdale in my constituency is the second largest town in the northwest without a railway station. A station which would bring social and economic benefits to the town, as we've already heard in Shrewsbury. As the Prime Minister is in a spending mood, albeit a little bit further south, I wonder whether he could give the people of Scamersdale an early Christmas present with the promise of a railway station. Yay.
Well, I'm very happy to look at what the Honourable Lady says. What we are seeing is more railway lines opening, more stations opening, and more railways being electrified. I think in the entire period of the last Labour government, they electrified just 13 miles of track. An absolutely pathetic record for a government that had 13 years to do something about it. We now have the biggest road programme since the 1970s, the biggest rail investment programme since the Victorians, and actually, under this government, stations, lines and electrification, that's all taking place.
Will my right honourable friend meet me to help get more beds for Hereford Hospital? Will he send a minister to meet the magnificent staff and possibly Welsh patients who have acquired addresses in England so they can access life-saving cancer care drugs that aren't available under the Labour-run Welsh NHS? Yeah.
I'm sure my honourable friend will welcome the £2 billion for the NHS in England, which the Chancellor announced at the weekend. That will be money that goes directly to the front line. Obviously want to see continued improvements at the Hereford Hospital. There are pressures from people from Wales crossing the border and wanting to use services in England, and that's why it's so important that the Welsh NHS has the improvements that we've been talking about. In terms of meetings and visits to his hospital, I'll look very carefully at what we can do to help.
Mr. Kevin Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Cutting net migration to tens of thousands, reducing spending on welfare and, yes, eradicating the deficit by the end of this Parliament formed the triple crown of the Prime Minister's promises to the British people. How does it feel as Prime Minister when you're once, twice, three times a failure?
I tell you how it feels to lead a government that's created 2 million private sector jobs. Turned around the British economy. And I'll tell you how it feels to have an economy in Britain that businesses right around the world want to invest in. That is the record of this government recovering from the complete shambles and mess that he left when he was part of the previous government.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister experienced this summer, as he may well remember, the congestion regularly faced by my constituents at Junction 9 of the M3 motorway. Can I just thank the Prime Minister, on behalf of the people I represent, for the comprehensive package of improvements announced by the Transport Secretary early this week? And would he share my view that my constituents can only benefit from this kind of investment because we've taken the decisions to get our economy in a place that we can?
Now, my honourable friend is absolutely right, and I know about the importance of the M3 improvements that he talks about. But the fact is, all of these things, whether it's improving our road network, investing in our NHS, building new railway stations, electrifying railway lines, these things can only be done if you have a successful and growing economy, a long-term economic plan, and a demonstration that you've got the public finances under control. With this Chancellor and with this government, we have all of those things in place, and that's why we've been able, over the previous days, to talk about improving our NHS, investing in our transport infrastructure, building the flood defences that this country needs, and putting in place all the infrastructure, whether it's ports, airports, energy, that a modern economy needs in order to sustain a level of growth that can deliver the prosperity and the security that the British people deserve.
Pierce.
Thank you. In the past 4 years, over £5 billion has been spent by the NHS on agency staff, with about around 20% of that would have gone into the pockets of the agency and not into the pockets of NHS staff. How many full-time permanent nurses would that have paid for?
That's right. Well, what we've got in the NHS is under this government is 1,300 extra nurses, 8,300 extra doctors, and because we've cut the bureaucracy, we've managed to remove 21,000 bureaucrats. No one wants to see extensive use of agency staff. All well-run hospitals will have fewer agency staff and more permanent staff, and that's what's happening under this government.
Order. Statements, the Chancellor of the Exchequer.